The United States of America is South Africa's second largest trading partner and a very, very important link in our economic chain. However, South Africa's relationship with the world's largest economy is strained due to, amongst other things, political affiliations with China and Russia. And this strain has placed trade agreements favorable to South Africa, unfortunately, back onto the negotiation table. If they are revoked or changed, it could have a significant negative impact on our economy. Ibrahim Rasool is the newly appointed South African ambassador to the US. This is his second term, as he also represented South Africa in Washington between 2010 and 2015 under the Obama administration. And he is, by definition, being our point man in the US, our country's most important diplomat. He replaces Nomandiya Mfaketu, who was pretty much a disaster during her term before she resigned due to an apparent illness. But there was a lot of unhappiness with her performance in Washington. And Ibrahim Rasool has a big job to repair the relationship between South Africa and the US. Ibrahim is on the line. Ibrahim, thank you so much for your time today. How does it feel to be back in Washington? And have you hit the ground running?
Well, there was no choice but to hit the ground running. It's very, very cold here. For the last few days, it's been minus 12, but I still have my clothes on the first term, a bit bigger, but it's keeping me warm. So we've had to hit the ground running. In a sense, I've had to come here. I've had to present my credentials to then-President Biden. I've had to attend the inauguration of President Trump. And then I think we've got the embassy working quite hard to be ready for what the president has tasked me with in terms of what we call Operation Reset. How do we rebuild our relationship with the United States of America? So I think that those are urgent tasks, especially given the pace at which President Donald Trump is operating in the USA.
Yeah, the relationship is not the best, and your predecessor did not ensure that the relationship between South Africa and the US was optimal. So you're talking about Operation Reset. Can you maybe elaborate exactly what your short-term tasks are?
Look, I think the short-term tasks, I think, is that we need to become a great team as Team South Africa. It cannot only be the embassy staff. It has to be the private sector who have offices and operations and interests in the USA that we need to pull in. It has to be all the entities that must be pulled into one team. So that's the first thing, building a team that is really up to the task. The second task would be that we must get to understand the new administration, who are the players, because we are not dealing with very many familiar faces. There are familiar faces like Marco Rubio, who is now Secretary of State, but there's a whole lot of new people coming in. So we need to understand that and not deal with it in a way that was usual for diplomacy, because this is not usual diplomacy. And then the third one is to identify the critical objectives that South Africa needs to pursue, and AGOA is top of the list for us, maintaining the investments and expanding them that we have by 600 US companies is critical for us. I think fighting and understanding the implications of the executive orders, amongst others, on PEPFAR, the fund that helps us with fighting HIV/AIDS and tuberculosis. So I think we have an agenda, we have a task list, and I think that that's what we are pursuing in the United States of America.
What is your perception of the current relationship between South Africa and the US?
I think that there is an acknowledgement by the president, the government of national unity, our minister, Ronald Lamola, and our team here. When we say Operation Reset, we acknowledge that something has gone wrong, something must be repaired. And so we know that South Africa has taken principled positions on matters like Israel-Palestine. We have taken a non-aligned stance on the Ukraine-Russia situation. And I think that that has not found universal favor in the United States. And therefore, I think we need to be able, one, to explain ourselves a lot more. I think, two, we need to understand that, for example, as the Israel-Palestine ceasefire lengthens, that it removes pressure from South Africa to be the spokesperson for peace in that area. And so I think we need to prioritize the matters that matter to our people and to our country, particularly with regard to our economic relationships with the United States of America.
You state that you need to explain those relationships between South Africa and China as well as Russia. What will you explain?
So, for example, we would need to understand that BRICS is a conglomerate of emerging markets. People confuse that when emerging markets come together, that they don't speak the kind of politics and share the kind of political values with everyone in it. When we do speak about political values, we have a closer relationship with other democracies like Brazil and like China. And so that's why we have two arrangements. We have BRICS, which is emerging markets. We have emerging democracies, and therefore we have IPSA, India, Brazil, and South Africa. And it's, for example, it's been the IPSA group within BRICS that have resisted the idea of de-dollarization and not trading with the dollar. We understand the importance of the dollar to our own economies, and we are not up for agendas that promote de-dollarization.
The key policies affecting South Africa, which you referred to earlier, which is back perhaps for the wrong reasons on the negotiating table, is the AGOA Act, which allows South Africa and other African countries to export goods to the US without tariffs. And there's also a bilateral trade agreement. How serious do you think are the Americans to revoke those agreements or change it? Maybe put differently, do they regard it as a stick?
I think it will always be a stick because it's a unilateral trade agreement, that it is something that the US has gifted Africa, and therefore they are the ones in control of it. So it will always be a stick. But I think that what has emerged since Mr. Trump's executive orders is that tariffs is going to be fairly universal, and it's going to be a way in which the United States raises external revenue. And therefore, they've started off with Canada and Mexico, their immediate neighbors. They are looking at a universal imposition of tariffs. They are looking, for example, that if there is a tariff imbalance between the United States and another country, they will balance it out, meaning that if the United States charges another country 3% tariffs and that country charges the United States 10% tariffs, the United States will raise it to 10%. So I think that there is a universal way in which President Trump has identified how tariffs will work. And so that may undercut AGOA in some particular way. But then there is the very special case of the African Growth and Opportunities Act. And I think all African countries are anxious that in universal tariffs, we may lose some of the benefits of AGOA. But I think our job is to persuade the United States that we are not a continent or even a country that threatens U.S. jobs in the same way that the current administration perceives Mexico and Canada as threatening the interests of the United States of America.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Donald Trump has warned about tariffs. He's serious about it. And our agreements or trade agreements largely benefits from lower tariffs. Have you seen anything from the Trump administration that could, from a tariff perspective, and just because of Trump's position towards tariffs, affect our country?
The fact is that there are a number of Congress members and senators in the USA who have particularly threatened South Africa to remove us from the African Growth and Opportunities Act. Those are both what I would call political actions against us, based on particularly the Israel-Palestine situation, as well as economic ones, because South Africa under AGOA is probably the only country in Africa that brings manufactured goods like BMWs onto the US market. So it's no longer a matter of South Africa simply exporting raw materials to the USA. In fact, 70% of our things that we export to the USA have a manufactured element to them. And for some, that was not the intention of AGOA. AGOA was a way to get raw materials to the US. What we need to do is to say, these are not threatening your automotive industry. These are not threatening, in fact, if anything, things like nuclear medical isotopes that we export to the US are absolutely beneficial for the fight against cancer in the United States of America. So when I speak about explaining ourselves, I think that these are the things we must make clear, that we are not a country that undermines the economy of the United States. We add to it, we don't subtract from it, and therefore we must make our case for remaining in AGOA as tariff-free as we can be.
You have met Donald Trump a few times. When last did you shake his hand?
Look, it was difficult to shake his hand during the current inauguration, both by the sheer numbers of people and the heightened security around Mr. Trump. But we have had occasion to be hosted by him in 2012 when he was a private citizen. I was the ambassador. He raised funds for the Red Cross Society of America, and he invited us, just three ambassadors, to Mar-a-Lago. And he listened to a speech I had made there and came up to congratulate me. So hopefully he thinks that my words are still fine.
He said you deliver a very good speech, if I remember correctly. What do you think of Donald Trump and the perceptions around him, which is in many cases negative? But what are your perceptions about Trump?
Look, I think that Mr. Trump is at best an enigma. You may want to buy into all the stereotypes about him. You may want to judge him on the worst actions that you have in your mind about him. But as an ambassador, you don't deal with your own feelings about the person. In fact, if anything, I think that he presents, particularly to his base and more increasingly to Americans, a decisive leader. Americans want someone who can act. They're tired of the gridlock that exists in Washington. And so he's a decisive man. He sometimes gets it right, sometimes gets it wrong. And whatever your feelings about it, I think people just feel that there is movement in government. I think we can just make sure that there is very little collateral damage for South Africa out of this. And so hopefully the fact that there's enough people who know me in Washington, I think will be able to attest to the fact that South Africa can be an honest interlocutor within the political process here.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting, I think, term for you. How long is your contract for?
No, look, I think general ambassadors don't stay for more than 4 years, but we'll see. I think that I wouldn't see myself spending more than that time in Washington. It also gives me a good deadline that I'm not here to park, that I'm here to finish a job and then go back home.
Yeah, that's a very, very important task. Just how big is your team there in Washington?
Well, the team is not as big as what it was the first time, but in Cape Town we grow up with a saying, "Klein mag het train." So if you don't have the big size, you must make sure that it is a competent team. And I think I've had my meetings with the team. I feel that there's an enthusiasm. I think it's up for me to bring some of my experiences of how things are to be done and get the team activated. And my sense is they are up for the task. I think I've seen enthusiasm for the job. They understand how critical this is for our country. And I can tell you that I've got people working in order to, for example, as their first task, make sense of every executive order and to look for the implication for South Africa. And we will be able to alert our government to what actions need to be taken in the best interest of South Africa.
Just lastly, and you referred to it earlier during this interview, is the role of the private sector in the dealings with the US government. How involved was the private sector, and especially our big companies, with the embassy in the US to contribute to build this relationship with the US? And what do you foresee as a perfect scenario for the public and private sector to jointly try and foster the healthiest possible relationship with the US?
So when I was here the first time, we did build this concept of Team South Africa. At that time, banks like Standard Bank were based in New York. Old Mutual was opening an office in New York. The mining companies like Anglo American that time had mining interests. And Sasol certainly was one of the biggest investments in the USA from across the world in Louisiana. And so all of them, together with Brand South Africa, together with SA Tourism and so forth, all of them were part of our strategic planning. Of course, if we now look at it, there are new players like RMB, like Glencore, Sibanye-Stillwater, they are all here. Nando's is very strongly represented here as a South African company. And I think that they are going to be absolutely crucial to help South Africa make the case, because I think we must overcome an element of a trust deficit. I think the concept of a government of national unity is absolutely crucial to help us overcome that trust deficit. And the private sector can certainly add weight to it. For example, someone like Elon Musk is a very, very important player who knows the South African private sector. And we are hoping that it is going to be a joint case. This is an all-in mission that I think we need to run in the USA, given the stakes that we have hanging on it.
Ibrahim, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your time today. That was Ibrahim Rasool, the South African ambassador to the United States of America.